Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host Devin.
Hello.
Hello, Devin. Man, every time I start this podcast, it seems like my audio jumps up. I try to change it, but what are you going to do? All right, Dev, what do you got for us this evening?
I'm debating whether to let you know what the author was to start out with.
Okay.
No, I'll just go for it. I'll go for it. Here we go.
Okay.
With a bark and a grin, he cruises by, the sun setting in the desert sky. He's living a life in the fast lane. With Alfie behind the wheel, it's never mundane. But as the night falls, Alfie slows down and pulls into a motel in some small town. He parks his car and stretches his legs and sniffs the air. The scent of adventure still begs. I like that line, especially. For Alfie, a dog of the road, a wanderer at heart, and with his trusty car, he's ready to depart. Listen to this one. Yeah, the one line. He parks his car and stretches his legs and sniffs the air. The scent of adventure still begs. Yeah. Now, that's a clever double meaning, right, with a dog.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm impressed and afraid about it is that's a poem I asked ChatGTP to compose. Oh. And all I said was, make a poem. Well, I did say in the style of Hunter S. Thompson. So, right, okay. So it is kind of like an adventure, right? And with my dog Alfie riding driving a car, and that's what it came up with.
That's crazy,
isn't that crazy?
That is. I was thinking, like, as you were going through it, that it was. It's about Alfie the dog, which is not a like completely foreign dog name, you know. I would think.
Right.
So I was like, either that's something that, like, Caitlin wrote, or something that you wrote, or something that, you know, a buddy of yours wrote, or something. I was like, I assumed, like, it was either something that, like, someone who knew your dog named Alfie wrote it, or it's just a coincidence that it was like Alfie the dog driving a car. You know, it's like, it's a funny thing.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah,
it's really, that's wild. Really weird. And I saw it writing it in real time. It's just line by line, and about, you know, 10 seconds, it was all there.
Yeah. That's crazy. So you jumped on the AI train, tested it out.
I wanted to try it, yeah.
It's wild.
And I also had it.
I haven't done anything with that.
I had to compose a letter to someone at work, which I didn't use. But yeah. I was like, hey, I want to relay this, and this. Mm-hmm. How best to say it. And it's amazing. It, like, I mean, you could work on it a little bit. You know, obviously, right, make it your own, but.
Right.
I mean, it'll write you a full email with, like, good points, you know, like,
yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah. That's the, I've heard a little bit about AI here and there and heard people's take on, you know, the possibility of, you know, like a college student writing a term paper just with an AI doing it for them.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like, it's crazy. And because it's pulling from obviously every source of information that it can on the internet.
Right.
There's no way to track it for, like, you know, because it's not pulling from one or two sources. It's pulling from everything and then just spitting back out information that sounds like a real person.
Right. And you can just change it enough because it's already not a direct copy. It's just,
right.
It's copying style. It's not even really doing that. It's just, from the little I know, it's just basically guessing the best next word.
Right.
But because it has such a huge library of knowledge, it can guess that in almost any context.
Right.
But yeah, what a crazy thing. And I mean, I'm sure you've seen it, and like the idea of it, I mean, they also have programs that make art now, like,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Tom, you know, he's a digital artist, yeah, and I've seen, I've seen him. He actually did a, on his YouTube channel, was it Turbo Simons? Turbo yep. Simons. That's his YouTube channel. And I think he's on some other stuff, but he does some great, really great videos of him, showing what he does and doing full drawings from scratch a lot of times. But I think one he did, he pulled up one of those things, one of those drawings.
Oh, cool.
Like a sci-fi robot on the beach doing this, right? And then it mm. does it. And then he tried to do his own. And I mean, it's amazing.
That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. You know, I'm like, right. I'm torn because it's an amazing piece of technology. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, just the idea of that it can do some all this stuff for you, you know, like, I don't know. That's tough. Like, it begs the question of, like, how important it is to be original, you know? Like, if this thing can do something, if it can write a paper for you and it sounds completely good and like, a normal person would have written it or talked, you know, talked through normal conversation, then, like, why would we not use it? You know?
Yeah.
And if that's your mentality, why not use it? Then how do you convince people that they should write something on their own when they can do that? And it comes up with something that sounds really good. And then maybe you just make a few changes here and there for a few, like, little bits of terminology that you would change. And then there you go. And if it can do it so well, you know, it's like, yeah, it's a weird one. It's a weird moral dilemma.
Yeah, I think it will be past what we can handle before we can handle it. Right? Like, it's already, all these things kind of happen in the shadows, in like the nerdy tech shadows. And then you get little bits and stuff like that. Like, that's the first time I've read that, something like that, or made anything like that. But that's been going on for years. But it's just getting, now everyone's getting access to it. So right. What has already happened or is about to be released that's been brewing, and then in 5 years it will be, I mean, you're not going to, it's just going to write emails for you.
Right.
It'll be like the autocorrect of, or the Googling, like, you don't have to know it. Just say, hey, write an email to this person. Telling them why I have to let them go. I think a lot of them, and I'll give them a good reference. And then does it real quick. You know, and then you're like, oh, no, that sounds great. You know, and then it's...
Right. Or, like, change a word here or there, and then you're...
Or a paper on whatever the question is that they want the essay through in school. Yeah. Like, hey, why is this important? Tell me about these 3 points and what you would do to improve upon, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
They just take your question and punch that into the next iteration of ChatGPT, and it's...
Yep.
It'll do it for you.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Maybe it will... I guess it'll change up maybe how you show your understanding of a topic in school. It won't be essays anymore, or it won't be, you know, just homework like that. So I'm like, well, now we're going to have to talk it out because, you know, you know, I can tell unless you write it right in front of me, everyone's going to be using stuff like that. So it's not going to, that doesn't show an essay won't show your comprehension of a subject anymore.
Right. Exactly.
It'll just be, okay, well, let's all come in class and discuss it.
Yep.
You know, and we're in just going to have to talk. Yeah. Each person come to me and we'll talk to it. Like, you can't just write an essay.
Well, but the problem also is, or not problem, but another twist of that is something like what I'm doing, which is all online classes to get my, you know, teacher certification. Like, how do you stop that? Right. I mean, so there's, because with, online or just plagiarism in general, you can do online searches for plagiarism and it'll search the entire, you know, online database for what you already wrote, you know, but that's word for word. So is there something then do you have to write in, you know, teachers now write into their syllabus, like, you cannot use artificial, you know, AI to write your paper. And it's a you know, honor system, like, 'cause they can't check it, you know?
But what happens if you're if it's last minute, you know you don't know it, but you need this grade to pass, right. or you don't yeah. know the specific thing they're talking about, people are going to use it instead of fail.
Right. Of
everyone's
course.
Everyone's honorable until you're presented with something that's going to make you not.
Like, yep. Right.
It's easy to be honorable when you're not tempted to do anything. But when yeah. you're, it's like, hey, either I put all this money into this class or whatever, or mm-hmm. or you're a student and you're going to go back. It's finals. Like,
yep.
I don't think I can make it unless I have this thing make my paper. They're going to yeah. use it. And
right.
And just take chances. Like, oh, well, either I'm going to fail or they're going to catch me trying to cheat.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's crazy, right? Because then you're like, then you're passing a class, which is saying that you are competent in that field or whatever that, you know, course information was. And then you go into the field that you're going, you know, that you're studying for. But I don't know. Yeah, that's, I don't know, that's crazy. But if you can find all that information online, it's so readily available, then. It's almost like it almost begs the question of, do we need to know all this stuff, or can we just use the internet?
Well, it all depends, right? If it's doing stuff with your hands, or you're a doctor, or you're an engineer, you have right. to have that stuff loaded into your brain already as you're working right. through it.
Right.
But yeah, if it is, whatever, writing certain things, or I think there's going to be a lot of like. Design firms out of gigs real quick, you know, because it's, you can already get templates and there's already a million websites out there that give you a beautiful website and template and right. you throw a, and it'll give you a logo and all this other stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
It'll give you a choice of 30 generated logos in 2 seconds.
So right.
Now it'll be that plus like, so a lot of that stuff will fall, I think.
Yeah. And also, yeah, right. You get the 30, and then if you want to make a slight change, you're like, okay, well, now add this type of thing. And then it gives you 30 more that are an iteration of that original one you liked plus a little bit changed. Yeah. I don't know.
So, and then it will do your logo, and then you can type in what you want it to say, and it'll write you a beautiful piece on your company.
Yeah.
You know, and then you'll have everything. Yeah. I think it will just shift like everything always shifts. But it is.
Right.
It is pretty. Crazy for I think a lot of people it's
kind of interesting that it's happening at the same time there's a resurgence sort of the last like 10 years in making things with your hands,
yeah,
you know, like blacksmithing and leatherwork and knife making and woodwork. Like there's this kind of resurgence of going back to the basics and making things and doing things. You know, like people are buying anvils more now than ever, you know, like even when right. like, you know, when it was like people buying them because there were blacksmiths in every town, you know what I mean? It's just, it's crazy. It's a crazy boom for making things, doing things with your hands. And at the same time, the technology is going so far that, and we have such a resource of knowledge online that at the same time, digitally, things can just happen for you.
Right.
So it's like the full other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
It's a weird dichotomy that we're faced with here. And you know, and I would like the difference is maybe it's that specifically because technology has moved so far forward and it's so the ability for it to do something for you is so advanced. That maybe that's why people are now, you know, in the last 10 years or whatever, backing out of that and thinking like, I want to do something real, you know, with my hands right. because everything's so easily accessible on your phone, you know? So right. it's like, for one, all the information in the world is accessible. Like, all right, how do I forge a, you know, a leaf shape that looks like a ginkgo leaf, you know, and you just search it online. They give you all the information, shows you this, here's a how-to video, bam, there you go.
Yeah.
It's all there. So, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's crazy.
Well, for now, I bet. I think we probably have 30 more years until like a humanoid robot can do anything that we can do with our hands.
Right.
And better. Because we already have you look at like Boston Dynamics and all these things. These robots right, yeah. that can run, jump, spin, and do all these things. And that's just going to get lighter and smarter, and I mean, you can already put something like a ChatGPT. I saw there's a video game that uses it. Any NPC, any non-player character, you know, normally like, oh, in a town, you walk up and you talk to them, and they'll have like three lines of dialogue that just cycle through.
Yeah.
Now you can ask it anything, and it'll give you a answer in that style of whatever the game developer wants it to be.
Right.
Like, hey, it's an angry cowboy.
Yeah.
And he's drunk. And anything you ask it in the world, it will, in real time, respond to that.
Right. Through the lens of, you know.
Through the lens
Tell me about the nuclear physics through the lens of a drunk cowboy, you know.
Like, they'll be like, what are you talking about? I don't know what you're, blah, blah, blah. And then he'll go on about some mission he needed to do. So you can take that. They're already doing that. And you can put that into one of these robots that can walk around.
Yep.
And chat with you. And like people think that you're not going to want to be friends with these things. But then, like, we all love, like, fantasy, like R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah, right.
Like in the movies, when they die or they get hurt, we feel bad for them.
Yeah.
Like, of course we'll like them. Like, they'll probably be some of our best friends by the time we're, like, old. Like, you know?
Yeah, 30 years. That's probably 70.
Yeah, they'll be hanging out with us, like, chatting about whatever we want to chat about.
Right.
And it'll just be, it'll know right what you want to talk about.
Yeah, it's a weird concept. It's just so foreign, you know? Mm-hmm. It's becoming less and less foreign, but it's still, I think that's a good example that you talk about, like C-3PO and R2-D2.
Right.
You know, these super lovable characters. That's one thing that they never really talk about in the Star Wars movies. The idea of AI being good or bad, because there are good and bad robots.
Right.
And they're all like viewed and interacted with as if they were normal thinking people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like the creators, obviously George Lucas and everyone else who created and produced those movies, just like that had to have come up at some point, you know, like, are these just characters like any other normal character who have who can think right and wrong and will make the correct decisions based off of morals, you know, like, and because that's the way it seems throughout all of the movies, all the Star Wars movies, that they just had just decided, like, yeah, it's going to be a robot character, but all of our characters are going to have the same type of moral compass.
To a degree, but I mean, then you have bad robots that are for whatever the Empire.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, it's like they're like
you program them, but maybe you like program them that way for life or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Like, but they're just bad. You know, they're not like, to me, robots aren't bad or good. They're just logical. Yeah. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's purely a numbers game when it's a computer. Well, yeah.
But then that's when Terminator or 2001 happens. Because it's just being logical. It's going, hey, we got a mission to do.
Yeah.
And then the dumb human saying, well, no, I don't want to do that mission because I'm scared for my life. And then the computer just says, well, your life doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter in the grand scale. I'm just going to get this mission done.
Yeah.
They gotta
And that's like, that's what the all of the robot or the, you know, artificial intelligence in the Star Wars movies, they don't have that. There's not that type of like, I mean, I guess they probably do, but I mean, they also have the droids. The moral compass.
They have bad guy droids and good. They just seem to be like soldiers on the other side.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So that's maybe just what it'll be, but I think we'll all definitely accept it real quick. Like,
right.
I mean, even the joke my wife and I always make, it's like, look, we don't want like Alexa or a lot of these things. It seems like a big privacy give, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're constantly listening and who knows what down the road anything will be used for. Who knows what? But that's, you know, you don't want that if you can help it. But then we're like, well, once instead of like, oh, you can give up your privacy because it can turn the lights on and like play a song.
Right.
We're always like, well, those are the easiest things in the world to do. Once it can do laundry and cook dinner,
then
fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever. You have access.
Yeah.
Once it can do the hardest things that we do, the most time consuming things. Yeah. But for now I can turn my lights on and play music on my Like, I don't need anything to do that.
Yeah, if I can go down the shop and keep on working and hanging out and doing what I want to do while the robot does all the shitty stuff, you know, the chores.
Cooking, then, laundry. Yeah. By the time you get up, everything's ready.
Yeah, house is clean.
It'll sit down with you, chat with you. Oh, how's the shop? I heard this. And that's
crazy. And, yeah, like you said, that in the way, like, the speed, the how fast, what's that? It's the rate of climb, right? It's getting faster and faster. Technology is growing faster and faster. Right. You know, 30 years, who knows? Like 30 years ago, there were no smartphones. You know, there was like, 93, right?
Yeah, no one was really using the internet at all.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was there. You know, it was there, but it wasn't
a thing to send emails, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't buy anything online yet.
Right. Yeah. Even 20 years ago, you know, not everyone had smartphones.
Right.
In 2003. I mean, I graduated from college in 2001 and 2005, and I didn't have an iPhone until 2010, 11. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's crazy. I didn't even have a cell phone, like my own cell phone, until like 2006.
Right.
It's just, it's crazy.
Wild stuff. So, I don't know how we got off a tech tangent, but I do know. I did that quote. But, yeah, there you go.
It's fascinating because what we do with the art of craftsmanship is so hands-on. It's so individual, you know. It's like what I make, no one else can make. Like, yeah, someone else can make the same thing, but it's not going to look exactly like what I made. It might look really close, but it's not going to be exact because my hand did all like a certain way and certain angle and ground and shaped and cut and, you know.
But then, then in when you have like a humanoid robot around.
Right.
They can do it for you, whether you want it to or not. It'd be nice to work aside as a shop assistant.
Right.
A lot of the hand stuff you can do.
Yeah.
But you'll be like, hey, I need you to cut out like a bunch of blanks. Do this.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, you got it.
Star Wars.
I'll work for a few hours and then come down. I'll have all these blanks out.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll chat, listen to music. Again, we'll continue. We'll both work together, like finish it up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're only a few steps from that because there's a ton of tools that do a lot of the stuff for you. Right. It's like,
right.
Even as far as like using an angle grinder as opposed to using a handsaw to cut out steel, right? Like, but so then, okay, you use like a CNC or a water jet to cut out all your blanks, right? Okay.
Yeah,
and then you have all the blanks done. Then, you know, maybe you have a CNC to shape all your handles, right? And the original one who cuts out all your blanks, they also cut all the holes in the handles and the scales, you know, and you could have a CNC grind all the bevels. You know, it's like Aaron Goff, you know, his what he makes, his knives are almost 100% made on machines. Mm. But he's making the files to tell the machines what to do, you know?
Right.
So that's, so we're only a few steps away. And the next thing is like, is the machine just knows, you know, it already has all the information that you want. And you say, okay, go ahead and make these things. You know, I want to make a few more. And you're like just talking to it instead of putting it in a computer, you know, instead of a file and uploading it.
Yeah, it's going to be that first time when it's standing there with a knife in its hand. And you're like, you're like not sure. But I would think by then it would know how to comfort you. Like it would feel like if C-3PO had a knife.
Right.
You're not threatened at all. You just feel as if it's a friend or something kind and nice. And you would just go, I feel like we're going to feel just like we feel like driving a car, trusting the machine.
Right.
Something could go wrong. I mean, there's a lot of electronics telling a car to shift and brake and do all these things.
Right.
And you're just going to, you're not, it's not even going to be a thing to be afraid of it.
Right.
Unless, until it is, you know.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Until it is taking over the world and they all turn on us, but.
Yeah. We thought we were good up until this minute on this day.
We taught it how to build and make knives and guns. And
in 2053.
Yeah, we'll be old. Like, whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's our next generation. They can worry about it.
And then we'll challenge our robots to a fight. You think you're bad enough now?
Yeah, you think you could beat me?
Let's go.
You feel froggy?
Let's Leap. Go. That's the end of the movie. You like drop all your stuff. You just got a knife. Bring it.
I was actually listening to 98 Rock, which in Baltimore, that's the local kind of rock radio. And they were talking about this morning, they were talking about old man strength and how it's like, it's not, you know, like you think, okay, like these guys who are old, you know, like Vietnam vets or whatever, they got like these crazy hands and like all this tons of grip strength. And, you know, they just feel like they can lift and do things that they've always done. And, you know, they're like, and so they talked about the actual science behind that. And it's an efficiency of movement or of like muscle. You know, it's like from years and years and years of doing the same thing. It's not that like an old guy is any stronger than a younger guy. It's just, they know how to use their body exactly the right way to do that thing, to use the right muscles. And it's like, it's the actual definition of muscle memory. You know, it's like your body has tuned this action so well that, you know, men, as they get older and they do the same jobs over and over again, they can do it better and better up to a certain point, right? Until your body is actually starting to fail.
Right.
But, you know, 40, 50, 60, you know, years old, like, you know, even older guys who keep going, you know, there's an efficiency that's built up over the time of your life, and your body is like developed a certain type of muscle memory that it can do these things really well and even better than younger guys can, because you can use that specific muscle so efficiently.
Yeah.
It's like kind of wild.
Learning how to tear a phone book or something.
Right.
You know, there's like technique to it, or what do you call it? Arm wrestling.
Yeah.
There's like a way to leverage yourself that you could.
Yep. And even like the other day I was working with some students from Micah and Morgan, the local colleges near where I teach. And I was working with them, and we were like drilling some holes and putting some things together with wood and all with my students, and just like driving a screw with a driver, you know, like a electric drive, like just that understanding the right type of pressure, the right type of force to put on it so that you can drive the screw all the way without the head spinning and without it reaming out, you know?
Right.
And like, you know, we're just drilling a hole really quickly. And they're like, how do you do that so quickly? I'm like, I just have done it so many times. I already know exactly how to push, when to push hard, when to push less,
how
fast to pull the trigger. Like all those things are just ingrained in me. I've driven so many screws that it's just a second nature. Yeah. I know that when you start it slow and then you get it going fast and then you put a little more pressure and you do it all the way, you get the momentum. You know, it's like, it's not hard. It's just a matter of doing it over and over again. It's understanding.
Control.
Yeah.
Meets, you know, skill or whatever it is.
Yeah. And I think that's really like when people talk about, you know, it's 10,000 hours to become a master at something. Yeah. A lot of that is just that muscle memory, that memory of doing the same thing. You've done it so many times that it becomes second nature, that you don't have to worry about making a mistake when you're, you know, using your chisel or grinding a bevel on a knife, because you've done it so many times that you mitigate the chance of mistakes by having had those mistakes happen so many times that you just know ways that you do things that won't make the mistake. You know, like when I'm grinding a bevel without using a jig, I'm pushing on a certain part of the blade every time and just slowly working up toward it, because I know if I push on the wrong side of the blade, then all of a sudden I'm going to lose that bevel really quickly. And that's just out of muscle memory, and that's out of doing it, you know, 100 times or 1,000 times or whatever. Yeah. So like I think that's fascinating. You know, the more you do something, and then also I think that also translates well into learning new things. You know, you've said this before on the podcast, that like, it's like a trick. Once you know the trick, then it becomes easy. But before you know the trick, it's like a foreign idea. Like, how the heck did you do that? And you're like, oh, it's just this one little thing. Oh, okay. If I hold my hand this way, or if I hammer this way, or, you know, like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah. That's just the trick. You have to know this one little thing. And if you know it, then it makes it easy.
Yeah.
Quote unquote easy, you know? Yeah. But
yeah. Gotta know the tricks. Hang on. Let me plug my phone in real quick.
Okay. Speaking of tricks, Devin and I were filming a couple nights ago working on the spike part of the Gunstock War Club. And I'm, you know, after forging enough, like I'm not a blacksmith and I don't do a ton of forged knives. So I don't, I've swung hammers a decent amount. So I understand the form and kind of the best way to do things. But even still, after not doing it a long time, like my hands are sore. My right hand holding my hammer was sore because I just wasn't doing it the right way. Like there was something wrong about the way I was holding the hammer that like my middle finger, the knuckle around my middle finger was like sore for 2 days afterward. So maybe that was like, I was pinching weird in a way, you know, like I'm trying to use the hammer, which is the way that feels the best and makes, you know, it's, it enables me to have the most control while swinging, but also, taking advice from people over the years of me doing it and trying to kind of mimic the way that they have suggested. You know, so there's a whole combination of things there. Like you're doing something that feels right, but also because someone else suggested it. So maybe I'm not doing it exactly right, you know? So like, and maybe, or maybe it's also just that I don't, you know, swing a hammer all that often. So then when I do, when I'm forging, like after, you know, 2 hours or so, my hands are going to be sore because they're just not used to doing that type of repetitive motion, you know?
And it was,
or maybe I just wasn't holding the hammer right, you know, like, and it's, who knows?
Yeah. But you can see a little bit of him doing that on the Art of Craftsmanship Instagram.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Every once in a while I'll shoot something on the shop and I'll be like, oh, this is kind of cool. I don't want it to just be on my personal, whatever Art of Camera guy. I want it to be on the Art of Craftsmanship.
Right. Yeah.
And then I'll be like, Dustin, can you, this song's really cool. Can you start it here? And do this and like pick this right here because
it's like build the reel first and then you
mess
like,
around
give
with
direction.
I find the thing and then I'm like, okay, well, I can't. But I was like, oh, that's this song would be good because it starts, you know, it's kind of fast.
Yeah.
Green Hornet.
Kryn was really excited about it. She's like, oh, it sounds just like the Flight of the Bumblebee, like the piano. Yeah. I was like, yeah, it's really similar. You know, and it has, there's parts in the song where there's like music on top and then the background, there's very things that sound very much like Flight of the Bumblebee. And I was like, well, it's Flight of the Bumblebee, right? And Green Hornet, it's the same. Obviously, they're relating to each other. Like,
yeah, right. And then Green Hornet was, and then they use it in Kill Bill. And,
yeah.
And then we used it a lot. At Camden Yards for highlight videos or for my highlight videos I would build.
Yeah.
It always worked out perfect timing. And eventually, some people wanted it to stop. So every once in a while it comes back as a thing. But
yeah.
But it's like,
that's great.
It works. Like the people were like, I liked it. The DJ liked it. You know, it's good for like highlights.
Yeah. Dad just told me he's working with the Orioles again this year. He's like,
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, he texted me. I was like, oh, it's awesome, you know. And it's funny because the first thing I thought was like, oh, cool, I could go to more games. But like, you've been working there ever since. Like, we could always go to as many games as we want, pretty much. I don't know why it was like, ooh, you know, now I want to get more tickets to go to games. Like, it's going to make a difference, you know. But
you can get as many as you want.
Yeah, it's not you know, it's kind of a long haul for him now. But he's kind of used to driving long ways for work. Is I don't think that bothers him.
Yeah.
He used to drive from your place up to Hershey, which was like an hour and a half. So probably where he is now down to Camden Yards probably gonna be like an hour and a half. So
yeah,
that's cool.
So we I got the COVID right now, or maybe maybe not now, or maybe I do.
Right, maybe you still do. You had it. Yeah, you might still have it.
It was. Now, we like we said before, a couple weeks ago, I'd been sick, and none of us shook it, because it, like, went from me to my wife to my daughter.
Right.
Whatever the last thing was. And then they kind of had it, and we all didn't feel great, but then everyone went back to work, and then it kind of came back.
Was it COVID the first time?
No.
I
took
a test.
Yeah. It was like... Well, there's a stomach bug. We knew some of it was
from the party or whatever.
May have gone to a party, and you know, we knew a stomach bug was going around. So that was all the throw up, and then my wife got some of that, and I got a little bit of something, and maybe something before that. So it was a bunch of stuff hitting at once. So I just thought it was either something left over or something else small. The only thing that was different was which what you had, Dust, was that being right. really cold at night and having yeah. really having like a really tough one night. Like right. oh, really like that's what happened to me on Saturday after work. I went to work Saturday right. and then I came home and I was like, because I'd been sick for 2 weeks, I really hadn't had anything, any alcohol or anything, you know, right. to drink. Yeah. And it was that, and there was that Chris Rock special came out. So I was yeah, like, right. I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to watch that. It's live. It's in Baltimore, which is cool because we're here in Maryland. I was like, all right, I'm going to watch that. I'm going to have a drink. And then I had a Moscow Mule, which is delicious, which I love. It's yeah. just lime, ginger beer, and vodka. Really good.
It's delicious, yeah.
And then I'm sitting there drinking it. I'm just really starting to feel bad. I was like, maybe I wasn't ready for, like, maybe I'm still a little sick and I shouldn't be drinking alcohol. But I was like, I thought I was fine. I went to work and I felt good. And then actually I actually had one more. I was like, I'm just going to have another drink. I'm already drinking. Maybe I'm, yeah, just, maybe yeah, I'm right. just tired. I was like, whatever.
Maybe it'll burn it out.
Yeah, fight through, push through. No, but then I felt yeah. way worse. And then I was like mm-hmm. sitting there after the special was done. And I was like trying to, like, I don't know, watch YouTube or something. And I just got really cold, you know, that yep. thing. And I really started to feel, it felt to me like a flu or something, you know?
Yep. Yep.
And then as I was going to bed, I was really, really cold. And I did the kind of the same thing you did. I was like, I grabbed an extra blanket from the living room, stuff I yeah. never do. Like, I have one small blanket that I'll throw in the bed every once in a while when it's extra yeah, cold outside. Right. Yeah. I'd never put two blankets on. That's
no,
like,
yeah, exactly. I'll sweat my ass off all night yeah. if I do, yeah.
Yeah. So I did that and put it on, and my wife was like, that's weird. Like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm freezing. And it was a really weird, like, a weird night of, like, weird kind of dreams, yeah. real not good sleep at all. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like waking up kind of not being confused necessarily, but just not all there, you know?
Yeah, right. Out of it. Not, yeah.
Like kind of a really funky, like tough flu night, like your worst night. That's how I would kind of.
Yeah. When you get a fever and you know, right. all that, it all, yeah. and you just feel weird, everything, it affects everything. It mm-hmm. affects your brain, affects the way you sleep. Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of what it was. And then the next morning I was like, I kind of came out of it.
Right.
It was on Sunday. And then I, you know, I've felt better since. And then I was, and then we were going to shoot Wednesday and we did. And then, right. but then my wife had gotten some of it and. But I just thought it was that. We should have tested then. But I was just like, look, it's like the same stuff. And, you know, you don't think about, like, that night of that necessarily too much.
Yeah, right.
Because I was like, it was just a little bit worse than the last thing I had. You know, and it definitely is not mm-hmm. as bad as the stomach bug because I'm not throwing up.
Right.
And so I was just, like, kind of moved on. And then I let you know. I was like, well, I'm a little sniffly. And you were like, well, we're mostly going to work outside, which we did.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, we'll just shoot for a couple hours.
Yep.
And then we did. And then the next day, sure enough, yes.
Caitlin tested right.
Yesterday. Yeah. She was like, she had licorice, red licorice. And she was like, this has like no taste. And we kind of looked at each other. She was like, you think? I was like, hey, might as well take a test now. That's weird. Like, because she was like, not as stuffy. You know, anymore.
Right. So she like, she had come out of it too quickly.
Yeah,
like
she'd come, yeah. yeah. So she was, like, going through it, and then she'd come yeah. out of it the next day, but still lost her taste. I was like, well, I can taste stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know. And then she took it, and she was like, see? She had it.
It's positive.
And then, so we had another box. I was like, all right, I'll take one, and sure enough, it was for me too. So it's, I'm fine. Yeah. Caitlin's fine now. She had a little bit of a headache today and just wasn't feeling good. My daughter had kind of a fever yesterday, but she's better today. So everyone's okay now. So I guess maybe tomorrow, I gotta get some more, maybe I'll get some more tests and try them out.
Yeah. And like, it's, you know, at this point, because, I guess it's the unknown about COVID because it's changing so quickly and because so many different people have different like levels of severity of symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to tell. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, I want to kind of treat it like a normal cold. You know, like, okay, right. Whatever. If somebody's got COVID, it's just another version of COVID, you know, another coronavirus that's, you know, that's in the world now. And there's so many variations. They're changing. And
yeah,
and you want to be able to just be like, no big deal. Like, I get right. sick for a day. When I feel better, I'll go to work. But, you know, like, I work with, like, children, you know, like teenagers, and I work with tons of different people, and I'm around different people. And my coworker, you know, is a woman who's currently pregnant. You know, it's like, it's hard to, it's hard to know and feel safe because we just don't know. You know, it's like, okay, but I didn't have it bad, so I'm just going to go. But then someone else gets something that could be like, same thing with you and Caitlin, right? She obviously has exactly what you have. Like, you guys are all in the same house together. You spread the same germs, but she can't taste and you can, you know? So it's like, how is that? So, like, I mean, how does it affects different people different ways?
I feel we just got to be careful with it. A bad flu. Like, obviously when people have the flu, they don't go to work. They're not around people as right. you know, as much.
Yeah.
Cause they know like, oh, this is rough. You just have to make it a thing where, all right, stay away for a bit. When you feel better, come back in and we'll get past it. But anyway, so we have it, and I'm, like I said, Saturday was the worst, and it's just kind of been better and better each day. I'm still a little stuffy and cough a little bit, but, you know, not
yeah, it's not like much. The normal symptoms that, you know, just come with any type of congested,
So, dealt with that, and we'll see if I'm, I'll take a test tomorrow or the next day, and then hopefully we can get back to shooting and back to normal stuff.
I guess it's Thursday, so it's been 2 days since we shot, because we came over on Tuesday, and it's funny because then you texted me the next day to let me know that you guys had taken the COVID test and it was positive. And the night after we shot, I was going to bed, or maybe it was even the morning when I woke up. I kind of was waking up, you know, my alarm went off and I was hitting the snooze a couple times, and I could feel in my throat that I had this little bit of a sore throat. And I, you know, like, I didn't really think about it at all. I was like, okay, whatever. It's just, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's
right.
There's always like random little bits of sicknesses that come and go in our lives. It's just normal daily life. But then, of course, once you mentioned that it was that you guys had COVID, then my mind's on high alert. I'm like, what do I do? Do I? Because it was at work. You know, I was like, well, should I go home now or should I go get a test? Or, like, I don't feel anything. Like, if I don't feel any symptoms, you know, and that's the other thing. It's like, you don't know, because originally the very first, you know, the 2020 COVID, it was so contagious before you even knew you were sick. Right. You know, it's like, so everyone was just passing it and then you would get symptoms and it was already too late. You know, you had already gotten it and passed it on before you were the person who gave it to you, even knew you were sick. You know what I mean? That's why it's like spread so fast.
I think we're all crazy. Constantly going to be in contact with cold germs and COVID germs from here on out. We just have to, when you feel symptoms and you think it's getting bad, check yourself. Yeah. And other than that,
not
much you can do.
Other
than miss a few days of work, that kind of sucks.
Right. Yeah, it has been rough as a, you know, in the school system, because there's so many people together. Like, there's no mask mandate anymore, and we're not doing weekly testing or anything like that. We did the first half of the year, but not anymore. But, you know, like, the amount of people that are out has definitely increased since then, like, past years.
I will say this. We can't go into details about the hospital and how that works.
Right.
But they are some of the most lax companies on the planet about what you can do and if you can come in and work. It's crazy. Like I said, I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but
of course,
I know some things that if you think you're safe in a hospital, they I guarantee are more lax than the company you work for now about who can come in and how long. They just need people to work, so it's really weird. And the contradictions of like what hospitals can work, what hospital employees can work while and near COVID, and like what they show that they're doing, you know, like, oh, you gotta, if someone has COVID, you gotta go in this room and wear this, this and that and do this. And any visitor has to wear a mask. But when it comes to employees, Yeah. They're some of the most lax people around, which is ridiculous, but there you go. So maybe don't don't run to the hospital necessarily if you got COVID right away, because it's not safe there. It's not.
Yeah, right. It's the same as everywhere else.
Yep. It's like going to a grocery store. You don't know who has it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, like if a teacher doesn't go to school because they're sick, like, yeah, okay, there's a sub or there's class coverage by another teacher or something, you know. And that's no big deal. But, like, if doctors and nurses are sick, it's not like if there's not another doctor or nurse, it's not like someone can just cover it who's not qualified.
Yeah, people, you just, know? Like, people just work.
Yeah, right. So you just got to work. Yeah, they're like, well, we need you to work even though you're sick because there's no one else to do it. You know, yeah, like
people are here. There are people dying, so we have to take care of the people dying. And as for now, they're not worried about what you might give to someone or what you might have to contribute. It's we need to fill the hospitals with people who can, because everyone's burnt out after the last like 3 years.
Yep.
So hospitals are very lax on COVID rules.
That's wild. Yeah, crazy times. But yeah.
Anyway, like you said, you got some blacksmithing done, and
yeah. It's actually. I mean, I love being in the forge. I love forging. It's so much fun. And we were talking about this yesterday, or we were shooting that. Like my inefficient forge is becoming more and more of a hindrance to how we're working. You know, or how I feel like I'm working. Like I want it to heat up quicker. I want it to be more efficient. I want it to. You know, I wanted to heat the steel up more so I can work longer, as well as like the potential of forge welding, things like that. And so, you know, the forge that I made in the video, building the forge, which is perfectly fine and a really good design, was just the materials that I used weren't ideal. Like I used all hard brick for everything instead of using like hard brick for the bottom and soft brick that's more reflective, you know, for the sides and top, which is where you want to keep all that heat in. You know, like my...
Right.
I was just like at the end of the night after an hour and a half or 2 hours of forging, whatever it was we did, I was like leaning down to turn off the gas and I could just feel the heat radiating off the stone. Just like just crazy amounts of heat coming off of the outside of the forge. And you know, that's all that heat loss that should be staying in the forge to keep that like the forge body hot, which then I don't have to, you know, burn as much, propane, because it's just you just keep a little bit in there and it keeps that whole area stays hot. So
yeah
well, I need to do something
right. Switch the bricks, or we'll do a video of you building that the other forge that was sent
right. Yeah, I'll have to check that out or whatever, or just build it and test it out and do a little
I would love to do, not that you would use it, but do another bucket forge just on video, just to have it as a thing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the benefit of that is that it did heat up really well because I used a lot of refractory. Like, it was a pretty thick, you know, 3 or 4 inches of sand and plaster of Paris, which is a decent refractory.
Right.
And that little, you know, inside there, it worked well, you know, heat up blades really well. It's just kind of a small thing. So, yeah, I could make another one, you know, just a little bit bigger or you know, I guess... Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, that's a fun, small forge. It was pretty easy for me to make, you know, and it didn't cost much, you know, piece of 4-inch PVC and an old broom handle, you know, and then a metal, tiny, like metal trash can with some bolts, you know, at the sides to put legs on and then just poured in some sand, which I got from a sand pit off the side of the golf course property where there's like old sand, you know,
that
I just filtered out and mixed with plaster Paris. It was an easy thing. Yes. Yeah, it'd be a fun project. It's like a fun project to show people how you can make something that's pretty easy to start with.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you know, like the one I made was pretty, it was pretty shallow. You know, it might've been 5 inches deep or 6 inches deep, but then after like putting the blade in, you might be able to heat up, you know, a 4 or 5 inch blade, maybe, you know, 3.5, 4 to 4.5 really well. Everything other than that, there were times where I had longer blades where I had to use a like a little propane torch from the outside, you know, to like shoot from the outside in to, you know, heat up the blade. So, but for, you know, for what we did originally, like making small knives and things, it worked great. Heated up enough to do, you know, to heat treat blades in, out of the forge, you know, so that same idea could just be expanded on, you know, make it a little bit bigger, a little bit deeper, and you know, it could be a decent knife making forge where you could actually put some steel in and heat it up and you know, get it hot enough to forge as well as doing heat treating. So
yeah,
which, you know, yeah, I did that too. You know, we definitely used it to forge stuff. You know, I made little railroad spike knives and stuff, things like that.
Yeah, so. And that was your forge for the first couple videos.
Yeah, yeah, I liked that forge, and you know, that was after making the wok, you know, underground wok charcoal forge to do like the heat treating a couple knives. It was like, okay, I need to step up to another thing, and I just found another video or another like tutorial on how to make it and put it together, built that. And
I think that'd be a real nice quick video.
Yeah, yeah, it's a cool video. It's funny because I like. I hesitate to do something like that because it feels like moving backwards, you know, but there's always people who need to know how to do something for the first time, you know, and like we've done it. So why not show how to do it? Like, hey, this is a way you can build a forge,
and
you know,
give it away or whatever.
Right.
Like it's so cheap. It's not costing you a lot to make.
Right.
So
right, exactly.
Like we always say, like, the majority of the people watching any video aren't, they don't know how to do any of it.
Right.
Like 90%. And because if you are a knife maker or whatever, you're not necessarily going around watching regular old other people's full knife making videos. Cause you do your own thing.
Right. So exactly.
95% of the people don't have any of it. So you might as well say, hey, you know, we never showed that. Like,
yeah, right. Let's back up and show how you make it beginner forge.
Yeah,
you know,
90% of the people out there are starting.
Yeah. Watching YouTube and that's videos. Why, yeah, when people do like, let's make a knife out of, you know, the cheapest or, you know, no power tools, you know, like people love those videos because that's what a lot of people are looking for. Like, oh, how do I make this thing? How do I start? You know, like, how do I get started? You got to start by doing something that is accessible to everybody.
And that's a cheap project to have. I mean, you know, when you see all these great things, it's not necessarily inspiration. It can be like these awesome forges and kilns and ovens and stuff.
Right. But
the inspiration comes from the cool, cheap things that are.
Right.
Like, hey, I have $75. I think I can dump into this.
Yeah.
You tell me, you know, on my Saturday, I got a little bit extra cash in my pocket. I can go make one of these like today, and by next week I can have I can heat treat stuff. Like,
yeah, right.
That's what you
want. Have a little forge that I could do some, like, you know, some blacksmithing out of, and also do some heat treating, you know, knife heat treating, just something that can get steel hot, you know, that's not a coal forge, you know, propane forge is easy. Again, same thing, more accessible, you know, and also the way the bucket forge works is you just take a normal propane, you know, just a propane torch and you put it in the side. Right. So that's the other thing too. It's not, you don't need a burner, you know, you don't need like a Venturi burner or a ribbon burner or something. You just use that regular torch. I mean, that was just a regular, what's that? What's the brand? The yellow brand, benzene or something, you know, it was like just that. It was like a normal, I mean, I still use that same thing. Eventually I just hooked it up directly to a 20 pound, tank or a 5 gallon, whatever the grill, propane tanks are, just with a hose, you know, so I wasn't hooking it to like a small tank anymore. Yeah. I was hooking it to a bigger tank, but same difference. It was still just using the burner from a propane torch, which is nice. You know, it's all
Burn-Zomatic.
Burn-Zomatic. There it is. Yeah.
I still have a image of it on my desktop from, I guess I used a picture of it in a video.
That's funny. Nice. Yeah. So that was like, you know, like you said, all those things are something that Like, I think that Burns-O-Matic, that's a nicer one, but it was like $40 or something. It came with a cylinder, you know, like of propane or whatever, MAP gas. And then yeah. I bought, you know, the bucket was $15 or something. And the I bought a you know half a whatever, you know, a couple quart thing of plaster of Paris and mixed it 1-to-1 with sand and used a 4-inch PVC pipe from dad's house and, and an old, like, you know, 1-inch broom, aluminum broom handle. And that was all just to make the form. So like the PVC pipe goes in, the broom handle comes out to the side, you drill holes in it, and then you just pour the plaster of Paris and around it. And you just have that cavity with the port in the side. Yeah. And, yeah. And like I said, I put little, like, you know, the bolts and stuff down at the bottom and had them sticking inside of the trash can by like 2 or 3 inches or something. And that way the plaster Paris formed around it and made the legs rigid. So the whole thing would sit up off the surface a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun project.
It'd be a good video.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, and those are, it's funny because I was talking to you about this yesterday, or a couple of days ago, about doing a video kind of about some of those, or some like shop update things, you know, some smaller, easier things that we don't think about doing videos of, but like maybe we combine them together. Not that the forge is like would be part of that, but something like what I did on the live stream, making the little bracket to hang the trash can, you know, those type of things are smaller things that like people look for that type of stuff because they, you know, they're trying to do something for the first time or like set up a shop like just looking for shop tips. I think that's why shop tip videos do well because those are things that people don't, you know, you're always looking for a tip. You're always looking for something to make your life a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like that robot to help. Bring it back.
Bring it back. We take it all back. We love you. AI.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's been fun. I love getting out in the forge, and it's been fun to do that again. So it's like anytime I start doing some blacksmithing, I get jazzed. I want to do some more stuff. We have some things to do in the forge that could make good videos. So it's getting a little warmer out. Makes me want to be outside, even though it was like 35 degrees out when we were shooting on Tuesday night. But it was nice to be out there.
Yeah, real quick before we wrap it up, I went to Home Depot because I wanted there was a specific type of like plastic rocker chair I wanted, like Anirondack mm-hmm. rocker chair, and I found mm-hmm. it. And I went nice. I went to go get it at Home Depot, and it's. They had them stacked up and wrapped in plastic. I guess like, and they were out in the like garden center where no one is during the winter, you know?
Yeah, right.
So I was going to go in and ask someone. I was like, maybe not. I'll just wait. So what I wanted for it, I want a chair or I want two chairs over by the field.
Right.
Just to sit and chill.
Yeah.
And so I wanted some nice, I was like, well, I'll get two Anirondack because I love those.
Yeah,
comfortable one, like it's hard to beat. But then I was like, well, maybe I'll get a plastic one. And a lot of them are kind of chintzy, kind of not great.
Right. Yeah.
Especially with plastic chairs, it's like the Anirondacks. They have all that weight on the leaning back, on the back two legs. You know what I mean? Because that's the whole point of the thing, is to kind of be reclined.
Yep.
So it's like, I don't trust those plastic legs.
I know. Yeah, you lean back a little too much, or you push up to like stretch your back, and all of a sudden those legs bump out.
Like, yeah, you're like, oh boy.
You got to jump up a little bit to get them back under you. Right. They splay out and split.
So I'm not. But then I found these, the one that has, it's a big, heavy-duty plastic one, and it's connected because it's got like rockers on the bottom. So that just connects all the legs together. I was like, that's really nice. All you need. So
yeah.
Maybe I'll do like a store pickup, because then it gives them an hour, because it says like we have 15 in stock, and they do. They're just stacked up, wrapped in plastic outside.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll just do that, and they'll have to get one down for me.
Was it like up on a, you know, like a pallet racking type thing, or was it just?
Yeah, well, there was a bunch of pallets. Plastic pallets with a bunch of chairs on, with like all their different chairs.
Right. Yeah.
They're not displaying them yet. So, right. But I had found the one. I couldn't really get up to the top to like even if I could cut it out, cut the plastic out around it and grab it. So I was just like, yeah, I'll just wait.
I have a weird question for you. Right, has you. Completely nothing to do with anything that we've been talking about. You ever sleep with socks on?
I have, but I don't.
Yeah, I don't either. For some reason, last night I did. I don't know why. Like, I fell asleep on the couch and woke up at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And like, I was like getting undressed, like hat, you know, all groggy, like getting in bed and just like didn't have the motivation to reach down and take my socks off. So I just slept with my socks on. It was weird.
That is so weird.
Although like, I don't get like hot feet, you know, like a lot of people will like put their feet out to like cool themselves down. I don't ever get really hot feet. So that's, you know, but like the only time, I mean, there are times that I will wear socks to bed, but not in the last like 25 years. I've done it in my own bed. You know, I'll do it when I'm camping, when it's really cold, you know, like keep socks on.
I've done it camping.
Yeah. When you just like, you take your boots off and you just tuck in, you know, like you're wearing like a lot of your clothes, you know, it's like, just go right. Yeah.
Make your camp. I had socks on.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. And slept with everything. Yeah. But, I don't know. I just thought about it.
No, I don't do that.
Yeah, I was like looking down at my feet. I was like, "Yeah, hello, socks." Because I did. I just woke up in the morning, put my pants on, and put my shoes. Like socks were already on. I was good to go.
Ease of use.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was
no.
That was
no. I wear boxers and that's it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I can't wear anything. It's like I'm hot enough. Yeah,
right. Yeah,
it's like just my boxers and a sheet, and even still, I'll sweat sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Got my fan.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I have a fun recommendation. So it's getting back to the time of year where sailing is starting to get back into my guise of like of interest and excitement, because we got about a month to go before sailing season starts back up and
shooting season slows down.
Yeah, right. But I've been listening to more sailing podcasts and talking to, you know, Drew and Charles, who are the co-captains of our boat, and like getting things ready and planned for the new season coming up. And and I have been watching, and this is not because it's close to sailing season, but because we're in the middle of the ocean race. So it's every couple years, there's the ocean race, which used to be called the Volvo Ocean Race. Mm-hmm. But it's you know, international teams from all over the world that race around the world. And they just left 10 days ago. They left South Africa, the southern tip of South Africa, which is Cape Town. They went into Cape Town and they left Cape Town, and they're sailing 30 days around the Southern Ocean to somewhere in South America, I think it is. Or no, it's not. Where is it? I forget. Maybe it is. They're like literally, like they showed it on a globe. They're like sailing south toward Antarctica and then around Antarctica and then back up to South America. Mm-hmm. So they're going from South Africa to South America, and they're skipping all of like Australia, the whole Pacific Ocean. They're like all in the Southern Ocean going back up to South America. And it's not like, it's not a crazy extra amount of distance, because you're sailing so far south around the globe, you know. It's like crazy. But there's a YouTube channel called The Ocean Race, and it's all about, you know, it's like following the thing, and the videos are really well done. They're putting them out every couple of days, and they'll update you, and there's camera people on all the boats. There are five different crews. There are five different boats from different places. 11th Hour Racing is the one who is the USA sponsored team. There's like a Germany team. There's a Europe team. There's a bunch of, you know, they're all big sponsors and stuff. But you know, on each boat, I think there are like two cameramen, as well as I think a crew of five, I believe. And these are what are called Imoca 50s. And they're 50-foot boats. They're foiling sailboats. They have foils, so basically they can get up out of the water and just fly, you know, 20, 30 knots, just crazy. But it's really cool. It's just fun to follow along. And you know, if you're into racing, if you're into sailing, of course it's cool. But even if you're not, it's just the amount of talent and dedication. It's like, it's a feat of like devotion and strength and courage to like, the Southern Ocean is just notoriously crazy with like high winds and big waves, and that's where they are now. So they've been, and they're, I mean, it's wild. There's, you know, there are all these professional teams, and one team had to bow out because the bottom of their boat was delaminating from just constant shock, you know? So like bang, 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 like it was like starting to come apart. So they had to turn around and sail back to South Africa, and they're going to skip this leg and start back up in Brazil or something. Like, I don't know how that works. I guess they take a certain loss of points or something. And,
right.
And like different things, like there's sails that are breaking and stuff. It's just crazy. The amount of like torture tests that these boats take and the people take, and how they have to solve problems on the way. It's super fun to watch. But I'm really impressed with the production value of the videos they're putting out every couple of days, just following along with the race. So it's really cool. It's a fun like adventure to follow along with, and they do a good job of capturing it and making it fun and dramatic and a little different each time. So check it out. It's the Ocean Race on YouTube, and you can follow along. They have like 20 more days in the Southern Ocean before they get back to South America. So
that's cool.
Following every couple of days. Yeah.
That's like, if you can show like everything that anyone gets into are going to have like interesting bits and dramatic bits. And if you can show that and put that forward to people, you can make most things interesting. Like how F1 now has Drive to Survive. They do a show every season, like 10 episodes, and they go over the whole F1,
the year before
the whole thing. And
Formula One racing.
Yeah. It's great. It's so good. But yeah, you get so many more fans that way because you bring people in, tell them what they need to know, give them a little bit of drama, show, oh, these are the stories that are happening. This is what we're looking at. This is why these guys are better. This is why these guys are worse, and who's going for who. Like, that's what you want to know. And you get that bit, then you're like, you're halfway there. I'm like being entertained by it. Like, oh, cool, you gave me everything I need to know. Like, it's like having someone next to you talking about, oh, this is why this is cool. And, oh, see that guy does this. And, or this team last year, they couldn't, and now they're coming back for this, blah, 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 blah. Like,
yeah. Really entertaining. Yeah. You don't have to be super into it or interested in it. It's just about how well it can be presented to you. You know, and just kept interesting, you know, because there are tons of interesting things and all those things. It's just real life and people doing these like fantastic things that are above and beyond what normal people do in everyday life. So it's just like reading a story or reading a book, you know, you're like following along the excitement and you're hoping that they keep you enthralled with exciting things that happen. And, you know, the fact that they can do that. And a lot of that is, because this is such a like we're following along extreme sports, so extreme things happen in extreme sports.
Right.
You know, that's the reason why it's called an extreme sport, and it's just the top professionals in the world that do it.
But, oh yeah,
cool.
Cool. My, you inspired me to do a recommendation. There's a documentary, or not documentary, or it's a YouTube documentary, or someone just, a YouTube video, called The Incredible Calypso, Jacques Cousteau's boat. Calum is the channel, the guy, I guess, Calum. I haven't seen any of his other things, and I'm not sure how I stumbled upon that. I was probably watching something about boats, but not that. But I had... No, I don't think I've ever seen a Jacques Cousteau, like a full documentary. I know the name.
Right.
I know like some of the footage. I get the thing. I kind of knew what he did, you know, like late 60s, 70s, early 80s, like making, going around the globe, making nature documentaries. I didn't realize, I think, what I call from, was like he invented the Aqualung. So he was some of the first footage and the gear that they brought down in the 40s or 50s or whatever it was, maybe it was 60s, but it was like some of the first footage of that type of thing. So it seemed like this amazing thing, like going down deep and getting into areas that no one else could and shooting these great films of that type of stuff. And another thing I had no idea was how much, the movie, Life Aquatic is based on Jacques Cousteau. Now, I knew that was, I like, again, I had that in the back of my head. Like, I kind of remember the red hats and, like, I know he's, like, a filmmaker, but, like, the boat, all the, having all the gadgets on board, having a crew of, like, adventurers, like, that was Jacques Cousteau, and that was, like, the boat he had was pretty amazing, the way they set it up and had all these things, a helicopter on it, and a submarine that he designed, and you could edit right on the boat, and you had all this, like, film crew, and you had, he built a false bow, or is it right? That's the front of the boat, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
With the observation bubble thing underwater. Just like in Life Aquatic. Like, I was like, oh.
Right. So, and, all this stuff, it makes sense now, yeah.
And in the book, there's a book that the guy references. There's a fold-out diagram of a cut, a cross-section drawing of the Calypso.
Of the boat.
And it's just, I mean, that's definitely where he got it from.
Right.
That, like, let me show this cool, and there's even, like, a poster of that for Life Aquatic, where it's just the boat in Life Aquatic.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the same type of drawing, same type of colors, like, the yellows and the reds and stuff, like, and the red beanies and all that type of stuff. I mean, even down to the point where I think Jacques Cousteau's son dies in, like, a plane crash. Oh, and there's also another person who dies in, like, a helicopter crash in Life Aquatic. I won't spoil it for you guys, but I was like, whoa, like, it blew me away
so much. I mean, at the end of Life Aquatic, they have, like, a picture of Jacques Cousteau, and it's like, you know, in memory of Jacques Cousteau, blah 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 blah,
right.
But yeah, and you know, same as you, like, I've never seen a Jacques Cousteau documentary, but after seeing Life Aquatic, and that's, like, one of my I would say within the top, probably my top 20 favorite movies ever, like, I love Life Aquatic.
Yeah.
I love Bill Murray, and that's just, like, a great combination of him being his dry humor and all the fun Wes Anderson stuff.
Right.
But, like, yeah, like, after seeing that, I did more, like, looking into Jacques Cousteau and realized, like, how close they were. I was like, oh, this is really funny. But I didn't, I haven't looked at it too as much as you're talking about right now. That's crazy.
Yeah, you gotta watch, the documentary's great. It's great. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
All the trips Calypso. He did, and how they found the boat, and it's an old World War II boat, and it's wooden actually.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's an old American made wooden boat that was sent over. It was a minesweeper, and then the English sold it because it was one of the ones that were supposed to go to England, and then the French bought it for something, and then eventually Jacques Cousteau found it.
That's great. Yeah, well, there are a lot of boats that were requisitioned for mine and for, like, submarine hunting boats, because they were, and a lot of smaller ones. I don't know how big that one is.
This one is pretty, like, big. I think it was specifically made in World War II for that.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But then it was changed to a couple different things.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually just listening to a podcast called On the Wind, and they were talking about a boat. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it had that part of its story was that it was, you know, it was a submarine hunter at one point during World War II or whatever, you know, that it was had been requisitioned for a couple years and then, you know, sent back or whatever. Right. It's kind
of
cool.
I mean, you had this huge surplus of all that stuff after the war's over, so they were selling them off like crazy. But yeah, just the amount of, like, gadgets and things they came up with, it's just like the movie. Like, they had a in the middle of the boat, they have a access where you can go down and scuba straight down through the boat. There's like a hatch in the bottom, so no one has to know that you're, like, poking around.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. What a fun like adventurer, you know, like.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, and the things they did was great. They would just go to an area and then, I mean, yeah, they did everything. They shot nature documentary stuff. They looked for treasure. They went to wrecks. They were some of the first people to actually be able to go down and spend a lot of time around wrecks, because all the aqualung or scuba equipment they had, like, really interesting stuff. He was always trying to be, like, on the edge of technology.
Innovative. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Really. I have, I have a couple red hats because inspired from that movie. Yeah. Like, I remember, like, my buddy Steve from college, you know, and I call him Steve Z and stuff. Steve and, like, Z. I bought him a red hat. I was like, here, Steve Z. We got our red hats from Life Aquatic.
Yes. Yeah. And then, you
so
know.
Good. So good. So, yeah, it's funny.
You should check it out. It's great. The Incredible Calypso on Callum on YouTube. Callum, yep.
Cool. I will put that in the show notes. Cool. All right, man. All right, everybody. Well, it's been a blast. You know, we talked about some odd stuff this week, but that's how it goes, you know, AI and how AI is taking over the world.
AI, COVID, and Jacques Cousteau.
Yeah, right. Although I heard someone say, like, AI isn't really AI yet. You know, it's really just a database of, it's just a way to access all the information that it can, like, rearrange
what,
it. But it is,
like,
So it's not, like, completely independently thinking. It's just a, it's just a way that it can pull everything, all the knowledge that we use, and process it into something different. But
I mean, once
it's been programmed to do that.
Once it can convince you, once it can talk to you in a convincing way and answer your questions, which it almost can, then what is, like, then you're going into the whole question, like, how far does it have to be? Does it have to create itself, or can it just be a, I mean, once I'm talking to it, I will feel like it's its own thing.
Right. Yeah.
Because, exactly. I mean, we're, as human, we're just pulling up old data we have in our brains.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. Right. Same thing. Yeah. Everything we're talking is just pulled from some other reference that we've learned from somewhere else.
We're just a lot slower bringing it up and,
and
crappier at doing it.
And we just, like, fade away and die. Yeah. And our cells are just getting worse and worse over time.
We forget stuff all the time. We can't recall things. We're all
it's really shitty computers.
Yeah, we're really bad at it. So they're just going to, I'm telling you, we're all going to have buddies in by the time we're old helping us out and working the shop.
My buddy. My buddy.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, the first little AI dudes. That and Teddy Ruxpin.
Teddy
Hello.
Ruxpin. Didn't you have one?
No, I didn't have one. I feel like maybe like Freddie or Jesse or maybe one of our cousins or somebody had one.
I feel like someone had one.
I think Nicole had one. She definitely had one. She loved it. She would read books to her. It was the best thing she could have thought of. Like, she's like, I'll read myself. You read to me. It's great. I can do two books at once.
The coolest thing I had was, you remember that stand-up robot that was also a tape player? And you could put the tapes in its chest. And then it was a choose-your-own-adventure. So it would read you the thing and then get to a point and be like, which way do you want to go? And you pick A, B, C, or D, and then it would go to that point and continue to read.
That's awesome. Fast forwarding, rewinding.
Yeah, so you had these stories, you know, on tape cassettes.
Mini cassettes, yeah, right.
That's great.
That's awesome. Yeah, Corinne had this robot. Like that could balance. It was, you know, had like a gyroscope, so it could balance and like walk around when it, or roll around its feet and then do little handstands and stuff. It was crazy. And it would talk to you and do this little guard thing where it would get down on all fours. And then like, if you walked close to it, it'd be like growl at you and move forward and stuff. It was like protection mode and stuff. It was crazy. She was, I forget what it was called, but I remember she was like, for Christmas one year, she was like, for Santa, she was like, I want a monkey robot. And we were like, what the heck are you talking about?
Right,
and then we saw, you know, we found it, whatever it was, like some commercial. It was cool. And it was a fun little toy to play with, but wow. That'll be her. She's like, yeah, I don't know. And it's funny because that technology is not all that far off from like Teddy Ruxpin. You know, it's like pretty, it's really similar. It's just pre-programmed in there, you know, it's like, that jump isn't that much, but like, we'll see what happens when she has, you know, when Corinne has a daughter in, you know, whatever, 15 years or something.
Oh yeah, it's going to be like AI, the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Hello. Oy, wild stuff. All right. It's crazy to think about, but it's funny. Everyone's doing it. Everyone's like trying it out. And now you jumped on the bandwagon.
We can listen back to this and
be like, ah, that's so funny.
I'll laugh with my robot friend.
And laugh and laugh and laugh. All right. Well, this is It's my birthday episode, even though it's not my birthday. It's episode 122, which is my birthday, January 22nd. Oh. Episode 122. Thank you guys so much. Make sure you don't forget to head over to patreon.com. And if you join us there as patrons, then you can get access to Discord and behind the scenes stuff on Patreon. Support the channel if you want to, and support the podcast. And you can always, the main thing is head over to YouTube and subscribe and like and check out the videos and let us know what you think. Put some comments in. Make sure you check out some of those questions videos. And if you have questions that pertain to the podcast or something you want us to address, let us know in the comments there, or even let us know in DMs on Instagram, where you can find us there as the Art of Camera Guy and The Art of Craftsmanship. And just be part of the community. That's what we like. That's fun. We like hearing people. And what was it? I posted something recently. What did I post? I did something that had the question. Oh, the on Instagram I posted. I found the screw to the the Wilton bullet vise that I had lost. And it was funny. You and I were shooting on Tuesday, and I found the washer that I was looking for when I found the screw, because like I was looking for one piece of hardware and I found another piece of hardware. So I found the screw that was, that we had missed for the Wilton bullet vise. And then I found the washer too. I was like, hey, that's the washer I was looking for. So they all come and go, but yeah,
you know, turn it up sometime.
Yeah. And then I posted that to Instagram, and I had a guy reach out, and, you know, I said, if anybody can tell me what this is from, they, let me know. And so that's that fun crossover between, you know, YouTube and Instagram, the podcast, they all, it's all the same thing. So, but we like the community. So everybody, you know, it's fun to hang out and chat with everybody and, you know, build the community. So build it wherever, if that's Instagram or YouTube or here, we appreciate it. All right, everybody. That's all for tonight. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.